845-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Well, welcome to tonight's edition of the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. We're going to have a very interesting 2 hours ahead of us. My name is Michael Shaw. I'm going to host with my co-host, Roy Avila, this
Hello,
evening.
Hello, Michael.
Good evening, Roy. It is one beautiful early night here on the Santa Cruz, Monterey Bay area. Yeah, we can look out across the beautiful blue ocean and the beautiful green mountains that we're sitting in. Our first hour tonight is going to be with a guest, Nancy Thompson. And Nancy's going to discuss the emergence of the New World Politic in America, how the United Nations globalist advocates have disoriented America's two-party system, leaving average Americans very confused and, let's face it, we're a bit misdirected. In this show, we're going to demonstrate how U.S. trade policy has been used as a primary tool in driving the one-world political dynamic that we're facing. And in our next hour, we're going to go from the global level of the first hour down to the local level and talk about how sustainable development has reemerged with full force here in Santa Cruz after hiding behind the blocks here for the last couple of years. So we're going to take the whole dynamic of this new world order from the global in our first hour down to the local in the second hour.
And if you're a local Santa Cruzan, we want to know if you are paying attention.
There we go. It's time, you know, the reason to use Santa Cruz as a good example isn't because we're unique. We're hardly unique. We're a little bit ahead of the pace of the rest of the counties across America. Sustainable development is in your county, so you might as well find out what's happening in a county that's leading the brigade, at least one of the leading sustainable counties in America, so that you know what's coming to your county, and from there you can figure out how it is you can work with others in your community to stop the onslaught that will change the nature of having been an American and the whole application of the American experience over 220 years. We are moving toward the end of it, the end of the period of mankind's greatest achievement in history, the American ideal, as step by step these sustainable policies overrun at the federal level and at every local level the idea of individual liberty and personal opportunity. But here in our first hour, we're going to talk with Nancy Thompson from Orange County, California. You know, those of us in California, from top to bottom, whether you're up in the northern forests or down in the southern desert or in the two metropolitan areas in between, centered around Los Angeles and San Francisco, the crux of the sustainable development dynamic, both on the urban level, the Smart Growth Program, or on the rural level, the Wildlands Project, is in full emergence. And that was the case under Governor Gray Davis, and it is really the case under Governor Schwarzenegger. It doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or a liberal if you're in government these days. The programs just keep coming.
And do you want clarification, or do you want something, information on how what we're talking about may be in your neighborhood? Give us a call, 1-888-245-4237, and tell your friends, check us out, f21sc.net/radio, just in case you want to keep this.
And as we come up to a break here, I want to introduce our guest for the next hour, Mrs. Nancy Thompson. Hello, Nancy, how are you?
Hi, just fine, thanks, Michael.
Well, it's great to hear you, and I'm looking forward to the next 50 minutes. We're back here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio with our special guest, Nancy Thompson, and we're going to talk about the emergence of a new world politic right here in the good old USA with our guest, Nancy Thompson. What am I talking about when I make that statement, Nancy?
Well, I think one of our problems is that we can't be informed because there's a deconstruction of our political process. Both of the parties are converging so that you can't tell one from the other. And Republicans used to stand for limited government, but now, unfortunately, they're being confused as they're trying to reconcile traditional positions with today's actions.
Well, I can give an example here in Santa Cruz. A Republican leader said, well, no, we don't want to talk about this Agenda 21 stuff. We know what's happening, but, gee, we wouldn't win an election if we talked about it. And I thought, my, that's a strange a policy for a national Republican Party to have at a local level. As the country is sold out to this Agenda 21 sustainable development dynamic world government, but we've got a political party saying we can't win an election if we talk about it, that seems a bit strange to me. But I suspect that's exactly what's happening county after county across the country when you take a look at the Republican Party under the leadership of George Bush. And of course, it really doesn't matter these days who might be leading the Democrat Party, because they're inclined toward the same perspective.
No, well, the real conference held in 1992, which brought all this about Agenda 21 and called the Earth Summit, people don't realize it had nothing to do with protecting the environment. It's really about controlling the natural resources.
Well, if you can control the resources, you can control the people.
That's right. You control the water. You control who can plant and who can't. Excuse me a minute while I put my dog outside the door.
Fair enough.
I thought he was agreeing, or she was. The dog was agreeing with everything you were saying. That's what I was getting from the dog. Like,
well,
that's right.
Let's just hope that
we have a natural resource, a Samoyed puppy.
No. I thought it was agreeing with everything Michael was talking. Nancy, when did this all come to the forefront for you?
Well, it came to the forefront for me really a long time ago, because my parents were very active, and my grandparents, and I guess my great grandparents, and. So it just fell on me, I guess, that I was supposed to follow suit. I thought everybody was involved in things like this when they were in grade school.
Well, I think there was a day when that was the course, when people understood that America was an independent nation established on special and separate principles, and not a nation that was interdependent with what happened in other countries, which is the new gleaming coming from our schools. We'll be right back here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz in just a moment. We're back at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, and we're talking with our special guest, Nancy Thompson, about the emergence of a new world order and how that is lining up to take effect and control over the lives of every American, unless, of course, Americans stand up outside or inside the Democrat and the Republican parties. They're certainly not doing that today in either party. And grab hold of the concepts that built this country and reassert our individuality and our independence from other nations and proceed with the ideals of freedom. Nancy, continue to tell us how it is you became involved and how it is that the Rio Conference in 1992 set the stage for what we're seeing today.
Well, of course, that was the United Nations Conference. They had about two main conferences a year and then a lot of other little conferences going on. And my mother was writing about the UN, what a dangerous body this was, and she gave talks about it and she wrote quite a bit about it. Because actually the United Nations is a catalyst for all the changes we're undergoing. And its real purpose is to set up a one-world government.
That's a one government to
one world.
Manage all the people on the planet.
That's right. It's very centralized. If you think you have trouble going to your city council or your county or even your state, wait till you have to go to a worldwide organization to find out what's going on.
Well, of course, isn't it the case that it's a global-to-local system that they talk about, with local governments taking their marching orders from a global governance dynamic? So you still have local government, don't you? It's just that it's reacting to different principles in different ways.
Well, it's public-private partnerships. And actually, the United States cabinet members, they have their equivalent in the UN. They have the same setup. So the UN dictates come down from their so-called cabinet down to our cabinet. Then they go to the state level, the county level, and local, and so on. So we're often not aware that even some of our systems are being under international control when we think we're really controlling them ourselves.
It seems to me that many more people in America are becoming familiar with the term smart growth.
Yes.
After all, the Environmental Protection Agency has It's web sites promoting smart growth, and you hear it around Santa Cruz. And I tend to think that across the country, people are more and more familiar with that terminology, at least. And that's exactly what you're talking about with the global influence coming in through federal and state agencies to set the people's mind on a course that's contrary to the notions of Americanism as it's always existed. Is that
yes.
a fair statement?
Well, even our zoning laws are coming from the international body, but we don't realize it.
Well, here in Santa Cruz, we're definitely in the thralls of arranging smart growth zoning dynamics, which really means that if you're a landowner and you're outside their little tightly knit public-private group, you're just zoned out of any use until, of course, you transfer the land to one of their friends, and then all of a sudden, particularly if you're along a rail line, you've got really dense development that's approved and built with the government as the controlling partner in the arrangement, both before and after properties are sold to individual homeowners.
Actually, the Fifth Amendment on the Constitution says that they can take the government can take land for public use, but not for public benefit, or I should say private benefit. But of course, the Supreme Court made a very bad ruling, and all of the cities and counties now are trying to counteract that with other legislation.
Well, there are a lot of cities that are just running full bore ahead with the decision you talk about, the Kelo decision, and trying to acquire as much property and rearrange the city as quickly as possible until the citizens wake up sufficiently to mandate in every state. It hasn't happened in this state. It has, as you suggest, happened in a number of states where the effect of this horrendous Supreme Court ruling from last summer is negated. But even then, you can't negate it. The idea of America was predicated on the ideals of private property. And we've got a United States Supreme Court, not just in Kelo on a split decision, but in a decision that came out 3 weeks earlier from Hawaii called, it was against Chevron, the mayor of Hawaii versus Chevron. And there the court unanimously said that due process requirements of the Fifth Amendment do not apply in any real sense to the Fifth Amendment takings provision. So the federal government isn't going to involve itself with state determinations of property takings. And here in the state of California, of course, you've got a Supreme Court that pays no heed to private property dynamics. And so without the protection of the federal Constitution and the federal courts, including the Supreme Court, those of us in California and in many other states, as goes California, so goes the country, is the old adage. We're all in some deep trouble.
That is so true. We're the leader of bad procedures. I think that it's the trade, immigration, and, of course, the private property is the hallmark of a free society. But also our trade and immigration and the war are also tools being used to change us from separate nations into a global confrontation.
Talk about how that's happening.
Well, NAFTA was sold to us as the end for all global prosperity. Free trade, we were told. NAFTA was 1,400 pages. Since nobody read it, but they wanted it in the room when they voted, they brought it in on a cart so it would be in the room when they voted on it. And what they actually voted on was the implementation legislation, but it was still being written when they voted on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it has very many elements to it that people aren't aware of. It sets up a court that supersedes our court. It sets up 35 bureaucracies. One of the bureaucracies is even on used clothing. I don't know what they're going to do about that. But the main thing that it did was that it has made us the world's biggest debtor nation. Because of NAFTA now, we import more than we export.
And what effect will that have for people who aren't familiar with the concept of America's status as a debtor nation?
Well, the problem being a debtor nation is other people own our debt. China has bought a lot of our bonds. Of course, the Federal Reserve System is involved in this, too. And so what if they blackmail us, saying, we won't buy your bonds or we'll sell them on the market unless you do thus and so. We'd never know if this was happening, for one thing. And then, of course, NAFTA has changed the whole trade and economic world balance.
Because of the indebtedness of America?
Yes, and we have regulations on labor and so on and so forth. And, of course, in China, they have slave labor, and you can't beat that. There's nothing cheaper than that. So all of our manufacturing and other things have gravitated out of our country to some world, third world country or to China where the expenses are less.
It sounds to me as though that kind of trade policy is designed to eliminate a middle class, a worldwide to eliminate the middle class.
Yes, that's exactly what it's doing. The middle class is going away. Also in connection with NAFTA, we weren't told about it, but there was instigated the NAFTAGAT International Highway, and I always call it the mother of all highways. It starts at the Panama Canal, and of course you know China now controls both ends of the Panama Canal. They also are the only people who are in charge of the containers. No one else can touch them. So these containers come up through Mexico, they go across the international bridges into Texas, up through the middle of the United States into Canada. And this is the NAFTAGAT International Highway.
Wow, now that's a big highway, is it not? A wide one.
Yes, it's 12 lanes or 4 miles wide, and there's also a railroad that runs alongside. Then there are 42 webs, they're really called corridors, and these extend out to international airports and navigable rivers and rail terminals. They all end up then at the international highway. And if, I don't know if you in Northern California are aware of it, but down here we have the Alameda Corridor. Very, very expensive project. This is one of the corridors that's being built to have Long Beach Port connected to the Los Angeles Port and then to the rail terminal and then to the International Highway. And it's one of the most costly projects California has ever undertaken.
And who's financing that? Is that the federal government?
Well, the federal government, of course, finances some of it. The state government, it comes from all different sources. But what's really going to happen to pay for this, it was contained in six different bills in Congress. It was broken up in six different bills, so they wouldn't realize what they were voting on. But also, it's going to be receiving money from our toll roads. If you'll notice, many of our roads are being made into toll roads. And so some of this money will be going to finance the international highway. Now, when the international highway is paid for, and goodness knows when that's going to be, then the money will all revert to the UN.
Does the highway exist now?
Yes, the highway does. In Texas, they have a sign up saying, this is part of the international highway. Now, it's going on in all the different areas in the states, but sometimes they run into problems. They're behind schedule. In Indiana, they were taking up so much farmland that people got upset. They didn't know that it was the international highway they were upset about, but they had to do a lot of negotiating because people's homes and businesses and, as I say, a lot of farmland was being taken over to build this highway.
And I assume that's proceeded once the people have been satisfied with their grievance?
Yeah, well, what the government does, this is what it did in Texas. Texas said, oh, we need some road work done, we need some over bridges going over the roads and everything, and the federal government said, fine, we will provide the money for that. Well, then the next thing they knew, this road was connected to the international highway. So it's a carrot on the stick process that they go through. The government will give you some money, but you better watch out what they're going to do and what they're going to connect your roads to.
My. Well, that's a pattern that we're seeing with government projects all over. We've had shows on the California water projects, and again, it's the transformation of private as a private resource and the shift of that into a communal dynamic subject to governmental control has been buried in numerous state bills, so that by looking at any one bill, you can't see the total picture until it falls on the backs of the farmers, and they find that they don't own their water any longer. And it sounds as though this concept for the international highway, as you call it, is really the same kind of beguilement that legislators or those behind legislators are up to.
Yes, it's obfuscation. And one of our congressmen, I asked him if he knew about the international highway, and he didn't. But he said there was one transportation bill that was so expensive he couldn't vote for it. But you know the trouble with our legislatures nowadays, they don't read the legislation. They leave it to their staff, and some of their staff don't even read it. And especially when it's so convoluted and full of so many pages.
Well, and they don't write it either. The writing of all legislation is done by a coordinated international organization that writes bills not only for Americans or for Californians, but writes bills for Europeans and other foreign nations as well. So we really have got ourselves in the midst of the globalist players without knowing it. They're running a lot more than the average person would imagine. And of course, when they pull that final string, we're all going to be standing at the end of their rope with those that who have been deemed worthy of survival and a place, a menial place in this new world order, surviving, and the bulk of the rest of the people not surviving.
Well, actually, all of this is conditioning. It's conditioning us to all of these things. Our housing plans and for society and everything are going to be changed depending on this international highway and all of our transportation hubs. You know, they're trying to get people out of their cars and onto public transportation. And part of the way they're doing this is by having mixed communities. This means they have business and restaurants and schools and housing all within walking distance, so you don't need a car. And then we have here in the Los Angeles and Orange County area, they're talking about all these businesses that their buildings are vacated, and they're putting lofts and housing in there now. Then, of course, this will keep people off the international highway, because they're not really supposed to be there anyway. It's going to have 280,000 trucks a day going up and down it, so they don't want other people being in that transportation lane at all.
What's the World Trade Organization's connection to the International Highway?
The World Trade Organization is the one who has designated this freeway, this highway, I should say, and they're doing it for the United Nations. The World Trade Organization is a lot more important than we understand. It has numerous countries, of course, that belong to it, many of them third world countries, and they are the ones that continually vote against us in the UN. So it's really not to our advantage at all to have the WTO, to say nothing of having them facilitate an international highway that goes up the middle of our country.
And it works with the collapse of the border. It seems to me, and integrating all of North America into a region akin to the European Union. Doesn't
yes.
it have that effect as well?
That's what NAFTA is all about: is erasing borders and opening the borders to people and goods. Now, if people were worrying about the border, they should also worry about NAFTA, because NAFTA calls for keeping the border open for people and goods. So somehow we're going to have to refute NAFTA or get rid of it, or else we'll be violating NAFTA, and perhaps the NAFTA court will take us to account for that.
My. So the immigration issues that are being discussed currently are more complicated than the average American may be aware.
Yes, they're not telling us that all of this is included in NAFTA. Now, there was something called Border 21. I don't know if people remember that. It was started in 1996, and it's U.S.-Mexico Border 21. And what it did, it set up sustainable areas and talked about the water and the soil and everything, how Mexico and the United States were supposed to collaborate on all of these problems. Of course, we would pay most of the money to clean up everything, and most of the cleanup needed to be done in Mexico. But this was kind of the start of the NAFTA situation, because there were committees set up on this side of the border and in Mexico, and they each had their counterparts in each country, and they were dealing with all the different elements in both of the countries. So it was cross-border committees.
Wow. Is it your suspicion that, do you surmise that most people who engage in committees like this know that the ultimate goal here is the collapse of the American Republic and the amalgamation of America into a one-world government?
Well, the facilitator does. What they do with the NAFTA corridor and with the NAFTA highway is they will bring community groups together. They even include children. And sometimes they do it by the phone. And these community groups are told about all the advantages this is going to bring to the city and town. They'll get more money. It's just the best thing that could happen to them. And then if there's a doubter, that person will be sort of dropped from the group or marginalized. So then the facilitator, of course, her whole goal or his goal was to bring everybody to a consensus that this is a wonderful thing, and if they want to put some money into it, and they should certainly help help the highway come along. So this is what they've done all along the way to say that they have community output. They have started these community groups, which really are run by the facilitator who knows exactly what's going on.
Well, the facilitation process, we see it here in Santa Cruz on transportation issues, on business issues, on development issues, is a predetermined outcome. It was funny, we had the leader of the transportation consensus meetings here in Santa Cruz last week on a local radio program, and the first thing he said is, our outcomes are not predetermined. Well, you know, the reality is the more the public understands they're predetermined, the more defensive those who are engaged in this predetermined process called consensus become. And that is an important lesson for every city in America. As these programs begin to hit your community, whether it's the international highway or it's the transportation system for your community or the housing system or anything else that erodes the basis of individual liberty and private property, and which is so rampant in the country now, that when you begin to identify the consensus process, which doesn't let minority reports have their day, doesn't let any opposition form, once you begin to label them as predetermined outcomes, they become very defensive.
And this is exactly why these groups are formed, so that they will have a predetermined outcome. Now, also, something that probably hasn't gone to a committee is they're going to revisit the gasoline tax. You know, we have hybrid automobiles, and we're going to have all these business and home communities where people can just walk to work. They don't need to have a car. So the government is going to be losing money because they won't be getting the gasoline tax. People won't be using as much gasoline. So, therefore, the government is going to replace the gasoline tax by a vehicle tax by the mile.
So it will be a mile tax on every vehicle, regardless of its size or use of gasoline.
Yes. And, of course, with this new tax, there comes provisions. If you travel in polluted areas or if you travel during the busy time of the day, you're going to have to pay extra.
What's your source for that information? None of that surprises me, but how do you have that sort of advanced information?
This is a study that was done. They started in the universities, of course, to put this all together, and then there was a prospectus plan that was proposed. And right now, the DMV, head of the DMV in California, has decided this would be a good thing, a tax by the mile, and Schwarzenegger has said he thinks it would too.
Well, I haven't heard of a globalist plan that our Governor Schwarzenegger doesn't like.
Well, you know, also, there are going to be incentives in this plan, not just extra charges, but there will be incentives if you drive...
I love that word, incentives.
Incentive if you drive the appropriate roads. And, of course, these will be roads they want you to travel on because they won't be near the international highway. And the whole idea behind this, the people who were espousing it, is that travel isn't a right. It's a privilege. And so the people should treat it as such.
How are they going to know where I go and what I do?
Well, you're going to be tracked by the GPS, Global Positioning Satellite. You know, when the Global Positioning Satellite was put in motion, it was told it was only for military uses. Then after a while, it said it was going to be used for civilian uses, too, but they never said what uses. And what happens is your car is fitted with a transponder. Now, some people have a transponder in their car already, and it's called OnStar.
That's a GM product?
OnStar. It's a locator.
Okay.
And the transponder works for the Global Positioning Satellite, and it follows your vehicle every place it goes.
Well, now, when people buy a car, I think it's from GM that has this feature.
Yes.
They're told, well, this is how you can find out where you are.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's wonderful, because if you get lost, all you have to do is to call in, and they'll tell you even what lane you're in.
Okay, well, that's innocent enough today, it would seem.
Yes.
But it can lead to rather devious results.
Yes, everything has a use for the good, and it can also be used for things that are not good.
Well,
and
for
of
the
course
skeptic in the audience, Nancy, for the skeptic that's in the audience, why should he presume that that this service that he has with his OnStar vehicle dynamic, why should he think that the table can be turned and that can be used to track him and everybody else?
Well, because your vehicle, it will follow you every place you go. It'll know how long you stay. It'll know when you arrive home. And then, of course, all of this will be computerized, because you will receive a bill at the end of the month that will be taking into account whether you drove at the wrong times or not. And then this bill will be sent to you. You'll pay it once a month. And the pricing and routing will be tied in with the superhighway. Now, what this is actually doing, it is conditioning people. Well, I'm not going to drive at this time. I can't drive at this time because of this and so. It's going to change your travel patterns. I'm really not free to go to that place anymore. It's going to cost too much. So what they're doing is they are conditioning you in your driving habits. At the same time, they're restraining your travel.
Do you have signs of this already in Southern California? I know there are toll roads that didn't exist when I used to live down there, and now there are toll roads. And you know, you buy these little passes that you know, mark your passing past the toll terminals. Is all of that part of this process?
Yes, it is. And in the international highway, and also in our toll roads, there's going to be embedded an ITS system, Intelligence Transportation System, and this is a monitor too that helps locate where you are and how much you're going to pay and so on. I think some places they've done away with the toll road and they just have the ITS embedded.
Interesting. Nancy,
I mean, not with the toll road, with the toll booth.
When you speak to people about these things, don't they kind of get that look like you've got to be kidding?
Yes. And many of them hope I am.
We all would hope that you are, but I think our history and what we've been following, at least since I've been listening to these shows, and it all starts to happen in one way or another.
Well, this is a global system. You know, it's starting in England, too. They call it different words, but there's going to be a transponder in their cars, and it's going to be connected to their GPS. So it's going to be throughout the world, because, of course, this is all the world wants. The world government wants to restrain your travel and keep track of you.
Why?
Well, because this is the way they are holding the strings to everything you do. You'll have to get permission to do this or that or the other thing, or you might be penalized for doing something that you used to do and take for granted. But everybody's going to be working under the same system. We have to have all the world on a third world level. We can't have the United States be way up there with its high economic status and so on and so forth. That's why we're being brought down to the third world level. When you bring everybody down to the third world level, you can control them.
Well, with the technology, that becomes a much clearer and cleaner statement than what Stalin or Hitler ever imagined, because the technology makes it happen.
Yes, you know, Stalin used to use spies on the ground. This is what everybody used to use. And if you were in a hotel or something, you were a visitor, there's someone at the end of the hallway to ask where you're going. You go outdoors, and they also ask where you're going. And if you're meeting someone who is a Russian, say a scientist or something, you're told how long you can stay and visit with him. You're restrained. Only so many people can go in a car. If that divides up the family, that's okay. Everything is restricted, and everybody is watching everybody else. But now they don't have to do that because they have technology doing it. If you're in London, your picture is taken about 300 times a day.
I think it's about that way in Chicago these days, too.
Yes, and in Washington, D.C.
What other kinds of ways are we being monitored?
Well, actually, we're also being monitored about our personal habits, and our lifestyles are going to be under scrutiny because the commercial establishments such as Sears and Hallmark, Toyota, AT&T, Microsoft, and IBM, they are industries that collect consumer information. And this business is now partnering with the government for the purpose of gathering information on individuals. The government doesn't need to do as much spying as it used to do either, because it just pays private industry to give them the information on their customers.
Is that a form of public-private partnership?
Yes. That's just another example of it. And Axiom is a company that has fine-tuned this kind of approach to getting database. It has collected the database information, and it analyzes everything. Therefore, they have personal records, and they advise the mega companies on who they should fire or who they should hire. It gets down to very personal relationships.
How does that work?
Well, when they get information on from different areas, they scrutinize it and they analyze it. Then they put it in a warehouse in a database where it is kept until it would become useful for some reason or other. Now, many businesses have become marketing specialists, and this includes car dealers and magazine publishers and owners of hotels. And they gather all this private information, and then they can target people also with large banking accounts. And then they can give this information to these companies. Well, look, this person has a big bank account. Why don't you go after them for some money?
This also relates, does it not, to the very recent NSA coordination with phone companies when they were gathering up phone records and phone companies were admitting to turning it over to the government here in the last week or two?
Yes, that was General Hayden, was the head of the National Security Agency at the time, and the National Security Agency is the organization that was getting the telephone numbers of millions of people. Yeah. Now, he has become head of the CIA. The CIA is no longer the independent organization it used to be, since it's under the control of the Homeland Security. However, the National Security Agency is not under anyone's control.
So we can expect more of what you're describing with the illustrations that are, I think, becoming more apparent to the average American. I just will never forget my recent trip to Chicago and the lights, the cameras that were everywhere around that city. You hardly could get out of sight of being on camera. And these were all surveillance cameras, watching everybody and everything they did.
Yes, and many of them are able to zoom in on your face so they can get an accurate picture of who you really are. Now, another data giant is called ChoicePoint, and it has the ability to give billions of records about American citizens to every police force in the state. And it has compiled private information about people, and this includes criminal records and so on. And they will analyze each case as they receive it. But after completing this project, ChoicePoint sold all of it.
To?
It's now out in the market. to whoever wanted to buy it.
So is the government buying up the...
Yes, the government is very involved in buying up all of this information.
So we pay our taxes. But, you know, someone might say, well, this is just crime management, crime control, and, you know, and we're defining crime as thieves and murderers and rapists, and why wouldn't we want to...
Terrorists.
Especially terrorists.
Well,
because they combine all of these things. Now, someone might have a minor infraction, but they will be put into this whole catalog database with all of the other criminals. And then a lot of people wouldn't want even their minor infractions of the law being sold to someone else, perhaps for reasons of getting some money from them or something. Who knows?
Wow. Are you suggesting that the police state is on the rise in America?
Well, it really is when you consider that they're watching everything you do and every place you go and restricting where you can do, where you can go. It is the rise of a police state, but we don't recognize it as such because we're told it's all for our own good. And, of course, we have to stop terrorism.
Yeah, that's the boogie that is allowing our government to abandon the American traditions, isn't it?
Well, even the FBI is involved. Their computer systems and everything are very outdated. And so some of the companies, they're trying to work with different companies, different commercial companies like everybody else is. And some of the companies didn't want to share their information with the government, and the FBI wanted to install listening equipment in the Earthlink, install equipment, listening devices in the Earthlink equipment.
Earthlink, and the cellular phone?
Yes, Earthlink is a service provider, and they wanted to install listening devices in their equipment. Now, Earthlink took them to court, took the FBI to court, and they didn't win their case, but they did make a settlement. And instead of the government eavesdropping with their own equipment, Earthlink will spy on itself and then give the information to the government.
You mean spy on their customers?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, are other cellular providers doing that?
I don't know. Earthlink is the only one I've heard about, but I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't going on in other provider services also.
And Earthlink is an internet provider, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that would cause some people not to want to use such providers. Are there providers that are standing up for the integrity of their customer relationship?
Well, of course, that makes everybody a little bit leery. But I believe pretty soon all of them will be under this same restriction, and so you'll have to use one or the other if you want to use your internet.
Wow. So it is 1984 coming into place just a couple decades later.
I think so, yes. Now, they're also, you've heard about chips being put in dogs and in people. It has your whole medical history and so on, so that if you forget and leave your purse at home or you can't remember your medical history, it's right there. All they have to do is press a wand and they'll have everything available to them, the doctors, hospitals, everybody. Well, they're going to talk about using chips at a vital border, which is a surveillance arrangement at the border between the United States and Mexico. Also, our currency may be embedded with these chips. So they'll know where that's going too. And then, of course, we've heard about the chips being used in merchandise so that the inventory gets low. They can tell that this has happened. The trouble is that the chip will remain in your purchase when you go home.
Well, it isn't foreboding for a healthy and productive future.
No, it isn't. And I think one of our main problems, which people don't know about, and this was instituted some time ago under President Truman, is the National Security Agency, which is called the No Such Agency. because they refused to admit they existed. Now, people knew something was going on, but it was just a big hoax because they wouldn't say that there was such a thing. So people got to calling it, even in government, the No Such Agency. And then when an official was asked, an official who worked in this No Such Agency, was asked a question, he was told to never say anything. So it became the No Such Agency or the Never Say Anything.
My. Well, who's fighting this evolution of a the police state that you're describing?
Well, a lot of libertarians are fighting it, and people who are knowledgeable. Our problem arises when the information is not available to people, and you do have to dig for it. Many people are not curious enough to worry about, well, what is the NSA? We just finally heard about it now, and they're just giving us a little bit of information. Ron Paul tried to get information on the NSA, especially including information on their satellite Echelon. Now, Echelon targets all communications, your phone, your telex, everything, and they do this worldwide. They have dictionaries for the different countries, and when they hear a certain word, they zoom in on it, and then they track it. Well, Ron Paul wanted to find out about this, so he asked for information. They finally gave him some papers on it, but everything was so much blacked out that he really didn't know anymore after he received the information than before he asked for it.
Hmm. And is it continuing?
I think it is continuing because people are being very interested in it now since it's coming to the surface. You know, the real ID, national ID card. Well, it's patterned on biometric system. Now, the National Security Agency invented this system. It really has to do with your identification. They use physiological characteristics such as your hand geometry, your retinal patterns. Remember, some banks are doing that. Your fingerprints and even your facial bone structure. And physiological elements such as your gait, your voice patterns, and the amount of pressure exerted on your keyboards will all identify an individual person. And this is being put into use now. It'll be used in the ID cards. Some schools are using it. Other countries are also using the biometric system. So this will really identify the person without influence, like in the airport. You can monitor a person's gait or something like this, and that will ID them because everybody's gait and all of these different qualities are individual.
Well, now, couldn't one make the statement that we're living in a dangerous time? We have some dangerous people, certainly, who are roaming around. There are people who have had their way into this country made easy for them via immigration policies. And if they should want to take out American people with a city blast or some other devious activity, it's necessary to be able to have the systems that will identify the dangerous characters that are in our midst.
Well, this is what a lot of people have said. I don't care if they know what I'm talking about on the telephone. I don't care if they follow me all over the place. It's just a way to protect me. But people don't realize the protection comes at a cost.
Yes. Well, I think George Washington, from George Washington to Dwight Eisenhower, reflection on that dynamic was made that, you know, you can't sacrifice liberty for security, because if you try, you'll lose both.
That's right. And we have, you know, this has come about gradually. It didn't come all at one time. So we have been kind of led on one thing after another, and the explanation is, well, things are getting worse, or there's a reason for all of this. And as I say, most of our congressmen don't even notice what's going on, and they have lobbyists who are telling them all the time things they really shouldn't believe, but they often do. So they'll follow a lot of different courses other than the one that their constituents would like.
Well, you know, we find out that they vote on bills that they don't read, and they don't read them because they haven't even been fully drafted yet, and it makes for, that to me makes for a dangerous world when we have leaders who are following the company orders, and those company orders are coming from globalist institutions designed to make America dependent and make America abandon its historical dynamics. We're going to be right back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show to conclude this first hour in just a couple minutes.
You might be wondering if Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is a liberal or a conservative organization. Are they left or right, Republican or Democrat? But you'll find that none of these one-dimensional labels applies to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, nor to many of its participants. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz dialogue doesn't take place in a left-right, liberal-conservative dialectic, but on a spectrum between liberty and tyranny. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participants include people from all political parties, religions, races, and backgrounds who are united in the pursuit of individual liberty and the protection of our U.S. Constitutional Republic.
To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
Policies, procedures, and laws enacted by local government and non-government organizations in the name of diversity, community, and Earth are diminishing individual liberty, degrading ecology, and threatening human life and happiness in towns across the nation. You've likely already experienced some of the consequences of policies that are approaching full implementation, with little public discourse or voter input. Have you experienced any of the following? Restricted freedom of mobility as you sit for hours in gridlock traffic. Mounting limitations on, or even loss of, your private property. An engineered housing crisis that you're being told must be solved with your money by those who caused it. Loss of parental authority to a government education system that seems to emphasize social indoctrination over education. Transitioning of water resources to regional control by non-elected bureaucrats with subsequent engineered shortages. Heavy influence of international and non-government organizations over local policy at the expense of representative democracy. You're not alone in recognizing these and other symptoms of our diminishing freedoms. The adverse consequences of collectivist policies and laws enacted by local government bodies are affecting almost every citizen in your town. Many have noticed and are ready to act to advance individual liberty, family autonomy, a vibrant ecology, and a strong economy. They're doing this by turning their individual initiative into local action for national impact. To find out how you can join others to advance freedom, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. That's freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
Welcome back for the final minutes of this first hour of the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. And our special guest, Nancy Thompson, a research writer on subjects of immigration, education, and the internationalism, the loss of American autonomy that is fast approaching. And after this hour, and as upset and concerned as I was about those issues up through yesterday, I'm even more so now, Nancy.
Well, I hope you can still sleep well at night.
Oh, I sleep well. I sleep well. But, you know, it's those waking hours when I know that there's more to know and there's something to do. And there's so many people who aren't mobilized for the benefit of themselves and their families and their children and their children's children that, that can cause me some frustration during the day because these things are so important. You know, America's really never been under greater attack than it is today. And the attack is coming from our own political leaders.
Right from the inside, yes.
Right from the inside.
Well, you know, I was a little bit encouraged. The Patriots Act drew some fire from some people.
Yes.
And, of course, the FBI stipulated the FBI could go into your business or your home when you weren't there. and look at your equipment and so on. And this is where they could test the keys for a biometric pressure on the keys. Also, you know, they could go into libraries and find out what books someone had taken out, and the librarians were not allowed to tell that the FBI had been there. However, one librarian decided what to do about that. She put up a sign on the bulletin board, and every day she'd say, the FBI has not been here. So if she failed to put it up, people knew what was going on.
Well, you know, it's so important, and I think this is the real challenge that everybody in the listening audience, one of the challenges that everybody in the listening audience has, and that is, how is it that we cause young people to understand the issues that really they're the ones that are going to have to grapple with? The dollars are still flowing, the paper money's being printed, the jobs may not be as rewarding as they once were, but there's still plenty of jobs in the country, and so things can seem, particularly to a young person, as though they're sailing along in a fine fashion. And those of us who've looked at these issues and understand the history of American independence know that rough times are ahead. And so the real question is, how do we get the young people engaged and aware in what's going on? Because that's when this whole Armageddon will be brought to a stop.
Well, and the whole trouble with the young people is they don't know what they don't know. Our history books have been revised, and that's a thing you always do to a country. You revise a history book so that there's no feeling of nationalism, and the people that aren't important are put forth as being very important, and those people who, like the founder of our country, George Washington, now is down at the bottom of the list when they ask people who important presidents are. I think a lot of this is going to have to be a parent's input, and that's difficult, too, because they're fighting the school system, the government school system. And the way I go about it is to try to get someone curious about it enough to read a book. Books are very important sources of information. They have to be, their material has to be verified, and they come out with things that you don't get otherwise, because if you just listen to the radio all the time, or if you especially if you watch TV, which is dumbing everybody down, you won't get the correct idea of what's going on. If we could get the children to read, if some way that parents could instill in them a desire for curiosity. Curiosity is the basis of everything, I think. It's the basis of learning. And I am really troubled by the fact that we're backsliding in our educational system. We're treating self-esteem as a very important subject, and how this country was founded, or even the Constitution, that's negated. As a matter of fact, in one of the schools here, they were teaching the Mexican Constitution.
My. Well, you know, I think part of that message is that homeschooling, whether it's taught by the parents or through, the roving homeschool teachers, properly chosen, can be of great benefit. I want to thank you very much, Nancy, for being with us this hour, and you know, you've certainly given me a deeper insight into what's happening, and thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Well, good evening, and stay tuned, our listening audience, for the next hour. Of the
it's going to be a good one, an hour probing the mind of Michael Shaw.
Views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. I'm Roy Avila, and this is going to be one of my favorite kind of hours, because I think the theme is, are you paying attention? Are you understanding how fast these things that we talk about every week, that we just talked about for an hour, are moving in your neighborhood, wherever you are? Wherever you are. We're going to specifically talk about some of the things going on in Santa Cruz County in the next hour, but they're not about to happen. They're happening. We hear from people all over the country, all over the world, about the globalist policies that are in effect, have been in effect, and are moving forward. So, Michael, recently we've had some transportation forums, as they call them, in our community. Describe what's been happening.
Well, you know, Santa Cruz city politicians have risen up here a few years ago as word began to spread, and, you know, we were part of spreading that word, but it was happening generally about this fraud called sustainable development or smart growth or Agenda 21. Began to spread around the community, and boy, all of a sudden these consensus councils and programs went underground and behind closed doors. Several were defeated roundly, and they went back into their little cocoon, licked their wounds, and reestablished how they can come out with new, improved, and more forceful programs. So I think that largely happened in around 2002. Now, that doesn't mean they weren't doing anything out in public. They were, and they were making progress here and there.
There were action plans. There were different things going on.
Different things happening, certainly, and forms of ordinances that were passed that furthered their program.
Traffic calming.
They certainly slowed down the pace that they had experienced in 2000, 2001. Well, they're back. I mean, they're back like they never left, and with a force that is quite overwhelming. And we're seeing it from all perspectives. Still pretty quiet. It's mostly advertised mostly amongst the friends and supporters of the sustainable movement. But it's all preparing for this phony consensus process so that massive amounts of legislation can be passed here to bring their globalist visions to a reality.
And I would enjoy hearing from our listeners. Our number is 888-245-4237, because you might have a question or a comment that you want to participate in this particular discussion. Real quick, Michael, these transportation forums have just come up. There was a transportation issue that was voted down, but that doesn't seem to make a difference.
Well, you have to realize that the globalist movement, I think that Mikhail Gorbachev said it the best. He said the more democracy means the more socialism we'll have. He said that in San Francisco, where he's been housed by the federal government in U.S. buildings up there by the Golden Gate
Bridge.
Hold right
there. We'll continue that discussion right after this. We're back on the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. Go ahead, Michael. Pick that up. We're talking about how the more democracy there is, the
more socialism you get.
Yeah.
Well, we in Santa Cruz got a great example of that here recently. In 2004, we turned down. We were the only county in Northern California. I'm talking all the major metropolitan counties in Northern California had transportation bonds on their ballot. Now, you take a place. We had a guest on the show describing Contra Costa's transportation bonds. People thought they were voting for a widening of the Caldecott Tunnel when they voted for it. But no, they voted for a $2 billion bond that dealt with bicycle trails and bus lanes and train transportation or BART transportation. There was practically nothing out of $2 billion to widen the roads that aren't wide enough. But the headline was, gee, this could lead to the widening of a bottleneck called the Caldecott Tunnel in Alameda County. Well, it was $150,000 out of $2 billion bond issue for the study of the widening of the Caldecott Tunnel. The people in Alameda County voted a passage of this bond by, they needed 67%. They were well above that. Well, all the counties, Santa Clara, San Mateo, all the Bay Area counties passed their bonds. They were phony bonds. They weren't giving the people what they wanted, which was more lanes on their freeways. But here in Santa Cruz, it was defeated. 42% of the people voted for the transportation bond, $350 billion. And so the transportation, the Regional Transportation Authority, one of these actually Ronald Reagan-induced programs, he said that California politics had become horse and buggy and was outdated, and he wanted to go to a regional government. Well, the idea of regional government is precisely what the Soviet Union was predicated upon. We've got regional water quality control boards and regional transportation commissions and regional everything. Well, none of us vote for regional commissioners. They're all appointed by governmental insiders, and they're the ones spending our money and really ruling our lives. Well, after this boondoggle in Santa Cruz with the transportation bond failure, there were calls for eliminating the Santa Cruz County Regional Transportation Commission. Well, they haven't come to pass, not yet, but now the Regional Transportation Commission is out with a new program. Well, it's the same program, but taking that, taking that statement from Gorbachev on another step when he said, the more democracy, the more socialism. Well, it's easy. When you lose...
Hold that. We'll be right back. We're back on the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. I see Michael's just getting warmed up, telling you how even though you might vote something down in your community, they're going to try to make a move, and they, being the sustainable developers, the
political power, which today means you are committed to the globalist sustainable development formulation, which is global to local. We had these bumper stickers in our county. It actually came from the University of Iowa. They were all over the country, global to local, back in the 80s. Well, now we're experiencing some of the effects of the global to local policy. Well, we'll let the people vote on something. We're going to fool them about what it is, and we'll get 8 out of 9 counties to pass it. But this one little county, Santa Cruz, well, they didn't pass it. Well, we'll just do it anyway, okay? So now we're getting it done anyway. So the Regional Transportation Commission, in combination with the local politicians, namely a man named Fred Keeley, who was on the Board of Supervisors and then later up in the state legislature for a good long while with a pretty notorious sustainable development claims to fame when he was in the California legislature. Well, now they're back with their consensus process for trying to revitalize this failed voter initiative.
Talk about the process.
Well, the process is called consensus. And for listeners who don't have a full fix on consensus, we've done shows on that. Beverly Ekman is probably a leading authority on the nature of consensus. Consensus is about the process of how you change a government without objection. Because you go to these consensus processes, and if you're a naysayer to their predetermined outcomes, well, you get marginalized. You get pushed off to the side. Now, we've we know people in this community who are successful at going in and neutralizing the consensus process. But nevertheless, it's a difficult thing to overcome once your government has fully embraced the fraudulent process called consensus.
What I found interesting about the process was the facilitators saying, well, we know that the measure, the bond measure, was defeated. But we don't want to talk about that. We want to talk about what you think we can do to improve transportation.
Well, that's how consensus works. So there were three or four facilitated consensus meetings, in this case led by the former state legislator and now county tax collector, Fred Keeley. And so the game was played. There were some people who were there who were fairly effective at neutralizing some of the advances that they were attempting to make. But things have changed here very recently, because the process is has been changed. And that's because, I don't have the details, but there was an announcement in the newspaper, didn't give details. The County Transportation Commission has gotten their money. I'm going to presume they got their money from the state. So in their last meeting, one of the task force members confided to one of my friends that they don't need consensus anymore. They could play that meeting a little more straight than other meetings, which means they could write things on the board that wasn't really part of their program, because they'd already gotten their money. Now, not the money they needed to widen the freeway, but the money they needed for all their bicycle routes, and I call it their Peking transportation system in this county. You know, you get a bus, or you get a train that takes you out to the fields to work, or you ride a bicycle. So monies for that have been found, apparently, somewhere, and so now they're going to have a different process to reallocate or to allocate the receipt of these funds into things other than road improvements. So they've avoided the democratic process when it didn't work for them, when the people of this county, uniquely amongst Northern California counties, realized that the 2004 bond measure was not about widening roads, which is what this county and all Northern California counties need, but it was about bicycle trails, etc. They said, no, we're not going to spend our money that way. Well, now the county, one way or another, we don't have the answer yet, has found the money for their bogus transportation systems. You know, relating back to the last hour, you know, it's the process of taking the mobility away from people, giving them bicycles, assigned jobs, and child service, child care services during the day, that is what sustainable development and the County of Santa Cruz is really all about.
Well, the other thing, you know, is it legal what they're doing?
Well, I suppose that would be like putting a bandit in charge and asking the bandit if it was legal for him to take the money out of the bank. He who makes the rules tells you what's legal, and that's what's happening to our system of government in the United States. What's legal becomes what it is that those who are charged with the responsibility for making constitutional laws determine what the law is. And, of course, they don't regard the Constitution with any particular meaning these days.
I just don't understand how they can get around, you know, put it up for vote, voted it down, and they say, well, we don't care about the vote. We're going to do what we want to do anyway.
Well, I think that what all Americans need to understand is that sustainable development is all about predetermined outcomes. It is to restructure how the country operates, how each individual lives their lives, how many people actually live in the country. At first, it's going to be a lot more because then the immigration doors will be wide open. And then I think there'll be a process where the population will be weaned way down, because after all, how can you support a country with 300 million people when they're riding their bikes, going to assigned jobs that have no real effective use to the rest of society?
I don't know, but we have a caller on the line, Tom from Capitola. Tom, you got a question?
Yeah, I'm curious, Michael. You were talking about how the Transportation Commission got their funds from the state. Where would you investigate that? Where would you begin looking?
Well, it was a notice in the newspaper, the Santa Cruz Sentinel here, just, I think it was last Saturday's newspaper.
I'm sorry, I got the name wrong. It's Tony, not Tom.
And I do not know under what system of payment those dollars were received, but I intend to find out, and we'll report that when we understand it. But the consensus process that was designed for this transportation dynamic seems to have been abandoned. At least the principles by which consensus meetings are run was abandoned in this most recent one, the fourth of five meetings, and the newspaper announcement proclaimed the achievement of certain of the non-vehicular objectives of the Transportation Commission by virtue of funding they had received.
Okay, thank you.
Certainly. Thank you, Tony. And if you want to participate, 888-245-4237, and you always want to check out f21sc.net. We'll keep you updated with things that are going on as we find them out. So, this is what I like. I mean, I like what I don't like. I mean, tell us, in your opinion, Michael, how you think this whole plan is going to unfold again.
Well, once they've got their money, they're going to fund what it is they wanted to fund the first time and the voters turned down.
So if I'm a voter in Santa Cruz County, what am I going to see happen?
Well, I think we're going to see movement toward the creation of this rail line designed to move people up and down the coast. I think we're going to see...
And that is something for our listeners who are outside of Santa Cruz can pay attention to those same kinds of things. It's oriented towards getting out of the car, putting you on a rail line, putting you on a bike trail, putting you in a house that's on a rail line, etc.
Exactly. It's to build urban centers with houses on top of shops, small housing on top of shops. That's the real goal of the sustainable developers. There's one fella here who understands this dynamic and joked one time. He said, well, they're going to build a building in Kansas City, and they're going to build it high enough that it'll house all of us.
Yeah.
And there has been talk, this is understood by people who live here, of building, some of the sustainable developers are talking about 15-story buildings in Santa Cruz County. And for those who aren't familiar with our county, this is a rural county with plenty of open land, all off limits for even for owners to use. And much land over the last 20 years has been beaten out of people and put into trusts. And, you can expect that these land trusts will end up putting it to controlled organic farming uses.
Percentage-wise, what would you guess of the land in trust as opposed to land that's usable?
Well, land that's usable is only becomes usable when it falls into the right hands. So if it's undeveloped land, you can pretty well consider it unusable by and large. The focus for sustainable development is to take the transportation corridors, and by that they mean the trail line and the bus lines, and densify them greatly. The problem, of course, here and in many places in California and around the country is that we don't have the roads adequate to support the vehicles that large populations in people bring.
So wherever I live, I could tell that these policies were being implemented if I started seeing high-density housing in and around bus lanes, in and around rail systems.
Well, I think so. But the better way to track that is to find out how the projects are financed, find out who's building them, and who their partners are, meaning the local agency partners.
Hold that. Tell us more right after this. We're back on the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program, and I'm talking with my sometimes co-host, but tonight we're turning him into an interviewee of Michael Shaw. So we're saying how we notice that these policies are being implemented by who's involved, where the financing is coming from, etc.
Yes, and the other thing to look at is what are the conditions imposed upon the inhabitants? When you get a so-called isn't that a nice term? Affordable housing, meaning that you know, you're now living in a government project, except that we're going to call you the owner, but we, the government, get to determine what you can sell it for and who you can sell it to. I don't call that ownership, but they call that affordable housing, and then it can be affordable renting dynamics also, which means that you're either a friend of government or your income is low and subsidized by the rest of the neighborhood. Those are standard sustainable development, smart growth housing, and it's in every city in the country.
Let's get back to Santa Cruz County. What do you think is going to be the next thing that's going to happen?
Well, they're moving hard and quickly on three different consensus programs. One is the Santa Cruz Economic Summit, which brings in the Chamber of Commerce, which in Santa Cruz is fully lives up to the Chamber of Commerce's reputation for being an NGO, non-governmental organization. The way you become an NGO is to be sanctioned by the United Nations as an NGO, really an agent working toward the establishment of global governance, one world government. And the Chamber of Commerce in Santa Cruz is strongly behind, along with the City Council of Santa Cruz, the Santa Cruz Economic Summit. Now, that's about reshaping the economics of Santa Cruz on a public-private partnership basis. No free enterprise. I mean, you may be chosen to engage in a certain business, but it is your license as a business person that comes by the grace of government, not by the initiative of your own self-start and the satisfaction that you bring to customers. So it is about changing the economic character of Santa Cruz in accordance with the global to local economic dynamic, which is not private enterprise, not private property. It is public-private partnership. That's the same economic theorem that drove Benito Mussolini and Adolf Hitler. Now they like to say, "Well, we're not about killing machines as those rulers were. We're simply all about restructuring the economic dynamics in order to bring good health." Anyone with any kind of study of fascist economic policies understands that fascist economic policies bring ruin. Not as quickly as communist economic policies. You get a little bang for the buck with those guys who go running out for that special favor. But at the end of the day, there isn't the kind of incentive that comes along with the elements of free enterprise and private property.
So what are we likely to... Well, we're going to come up to a break right here. When we come back, we're going to find out a little bit more about what we're likely to see with these policies being implemented. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. If you want to participate, you have a question, or you're confused about something we might be talking about, 888-245-4237 is our number. And you can always check us out on the web at f21sc.net/radio. Talking about the economy, what physical effect, what are people going to see and or feel with when these policies start to get implemented?
Well, if you're a free enterpriser, you're going to be squeezed out. If you rely on free enterprise, you're going to find your products aren't there. But overall and over time, we'll find that the American middle class simply disappears. So if you're not part of the ruling class, And even if you are, you may slip out. I mean, they're as ready to throw their own under the bus as any Chicago underworld character might be to his family members. What we're going to find is a huge underclass in America, like any third world country that hasn't practiced the principles of free enterprise and based on the ideas of private property and individual liberty.
Give me an example. You know, if I'm a business person, want to start a business or do something in Santa Cruz, how are these implementations going to affect me?
Well, we'll take home builders. If you're an independent home builder, it's been tough on those guys for 20, 25 years in this county. It's going to become virtually impossible. Say you're a subcontractor, well, you're going to be working for the government. Because you may have a general contractor, but the only general contractors that survive are either the nonprofit partners of government or the insidious public-private partners of government, and you'll be working in that kind of confine. It's not that construction stops, but the ingenuity that comes with free enterprise will be gone, so the excitement of being engaged in a team that's all working for themselves but working cooperatively for the improvement that befalls everybody will be missing. If you're if you're a grocery retailer, you won't have the inside connections necessary to compete with those who do. And those who do will be big institutions. Remember, public-private partnership is about big institutions with inside power prevailing over all else. And I think any reasonable study of American history, while large corporations have done their role and made their contribution, it's not without the small guy coming up with a better program or a better idea, always keeping them on their toes. Well, they just get fat and sassy. So it's the elimination of the truly entrepreneurial free enterpriser that is at risk and is really falling very, very quickly. And if you look at the community-wide economic prosperity summit, this is the public-private partnership dynamic.
That sounds so wonderful.
Oh, it sounds wonderful, but you know, both Hitler and Stalin were able to make their programs sound wonderful, but words are cheap and action runs short when you focus all the power into the hands of those who simply want power. They don't want economic progress, they want power. Now here in Santa Cruz, the powers that be are up against the wall because things aren't going well, and so they're getting more and more desperate. But it's interesting that as they gain their powers, fewer and fewer people are even running for office unless they're part of this inside sustainable clique.
Real quick, we've got about 15 seconds. There were two other areas. One was the economy. What were the other two areas? Transportation?
Oh, yeah, transportation. And then one that I don't know a lot about, but it's gotten some publicity, the Community Coalition for a Sustainable Community. So I think you can see the whole ecological, educational, and business dynamic being wrapped up into that one.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break in a bit. We're going to come back. I want to talk a little bit about, again, what I want to get out of you is I want you to tell people what we believe is going to happen. So as it starts to happen, we'll remind folks that, you know, we're telling you what's going to happen. Pay attention, because really it is all about paying attention. If you want to participate in this discussion, 888-245-4237. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
We'll
after spearheading efforts to implement the United Nations Sustainable Development Agenda in Santa Cruz, California, Congressman Sam Farr wrote,
I am writing to congratulate you, the Advisory Board, and the Action Santa Cruz County Coalition for completing the local Agenda 21 Action Plan.
Congressman Sam Farr then wrote,
the local Agenda 21 Action Plan not only has local significance, it also will have regional and national impacts. As you know, the President's Council on Sustainable Development is beginning Phase 3 of its work, with an emphasis on sustainable communities.
Sam Farr continued,
I have been spearheading a similar effort to develop a process of sustainable development planning for the entire region.
So why does Sam Farr now say he's never heard of United Nations Agenda 21?
Yes, Congressman Farr, I'd like your my name's Daniel Beckett. I'd like your comments on the United Nations Agenda 21 program that you're implementing here. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
But you endorsed it, sir. I have your paperwork.
United Nations Sustainable Development Agenda 21. If there's nothing to hide, why does Sam now deny it? This has been a public service question posed by Freedom 21 Santa Cruz at freedom21santacruz.net, inviting you to advance the cause of freedom in the 21st century. For more information about how you can advance the cause of freedom, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. You might be wondering if Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is a liberal or a conservative organization. Are they left or right, Republican or Democrat? But you'll find that none of these one-dimensional labels applies to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, nor to many of its participants. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz dialogue doesn't take place in a left-right, liberal-conservative dialectic, but on a spectrum between liberty and tyranny. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participants include people from all political parties, religions, races, and backgrounds who are united in the pursuit of individual liberty and the protection of our U.S. Constitutional Republic.
To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
Do you think you're alone in recognizing that freedom?
Well, we hope you're not alone recognizing freedom, because that's what we're here to tell you about. Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. I'm Roy Avila, and I'm talking with Michael Shaw, and we're talking about a bunch of stuff. And what we want to know is, are you paying attention? Do you care that the things that you vote on are not paid attention to by the people that we elect to do what we tell them to do? Because that's how our government is supposed to work, isn't it, Mike?
Well, you know, there's limitations on what government can do, and you don't put it to vote. You know, I can't take the people in the studio right now and conduct a vote on whether or not we're entitled to your car, because you just might lose your car if we were subject to that kind of mob rule. So, you know, voting itself can be an effort at mob rule, and I would argue that this measure that failed in Santa Cruz was a mob rule measure. Well, now the story gets worse, because those responsible for that electoral action are now doing it without the support of the electoral process. They're just doing it anyway. See, that was the system of government that existed in Russia, probably still exists today there, and exists in many other places around the world, but is not the system of government that existed for over 200 years in the United States of America. And that's what's at great risk. Our children being educated in a system today doesn't teach them these things. In fact, they're being given all the emblems and mottos of sustainable development. And what sustainable development will mean when it comes to full fruition is that, is that, well, firstly, private property will be eliminated. You know, the system of property will be public-private partnership, so those who are friends of government will get some property, and the rest will simply be workers in that system. And if they've got more workers than they need, well, that's just a simple process of elimination that can be done one of many ways. It's about making one mentality. It's about making a smaller population. It's about a world religion that hasn't been disclosed or really discussed yet, but I can tell you one thing about that world religion, and that is that world religion will have no real belief in the supernatural power. It'll have a belief in the superpower on Earth that stands in the center of the sustainable development movement. And of course, that is the power that stands behind the dark curtain at the United Nations. It is not the United Nations itself, it's those who control from behind the scenes the powers that are being reflected through the United Nations.
Oh, we have a caller in line. Daniel, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Yeah, I attended that transportation meeting that you were talking about earlier, and frankly, I was offended by the whole process. It was this kindergarten atmosphere. They had, they gave you a few minutes to discuss in the group, and then they would have what they called quiet time. And then they would also blow a whistle when you were supposed to stop. I mean, I was humiliated. I hadn't been in a situation like that since I was in grade school.
Well, I understand, I've seen the videos, and I understand there was a magic wand that the leader would wave up there in the front of the room as they were some kind of good princess, that if you did what she wanted, she'd sparkle her magic dust upon you.
Well, actually, each moderator had their own little wand.
Oh, so they break down the room. There's no public comment. But they let you comment when they break down a room of 60 people or so, most of whom are stacked people from the Regional Transportation Commission.
I noticed that.
They break it down into tables of eight or so, and each little sub-leader then has their wand. This is the consensus process. Let me explain it for our listeners. Consensus process, predetermined outcome. You break into groups. You're really patrolled against speaking up in the whole group, because they don't want any errant ideas floating out there. Remember, this is about everybody agreeing to a process. If you don't agree, you know, they want to marginalize you and get you out quickly. But they're always worried that somebody might come up and say something that puts them on the spot. So they immediately, after they do their little forum up in front with no questions from the audience, break into groups of eight, with every eight having a table monitor, a facilitator at the table, along with a table reporter, all of whom come from the Regional Transportation Commission and who are all in on the big plan. And so while you sit at these tables with eight people or so, and stacked with the inside crowd, it's like sitting at a poker table where the house has got the table stacked and the cards prearranged. And you're just set there to be the loser. You say something that they don't like, it doesn't go down on their little report. And if you continue to say it, you're somehow ostracized and kind of isolated. But they've put up these firewalls because you can only talk to the six or so or eight people at your table, and you can't make a statement that the rest of the people can hear. So it really becomes a very staged dynamic. Now, have I described what happened at these transportation meetings? That
you must have been at the meeting.
Well, I did see some films of one of the meetings.
I mean, you're describing exactly what happened.
Dan, you've been to several of these kinds of meetings. Is this any different from some of the other meetings that you've been to?
The only difference in this one was, I think they've figured out that trying to have a consensus is hard if there's one or two people who disagree. So at this meeting, there were things being written down at our table that I didn't agree with. And I told the guy who was the recorder, and I said, I don't agree with that. And he says, hey, it doesn't matter. We're just throwing ideas out. So, you know, everybody has their say. So they've kind of evolved in this process. And I'm sure when everything is done, they'll come out and say, well, everybody agreed to these certain principles. And, of course, I didn't, and I'm sure there were other people who didn't either.
But the reality is you've got this transportation commission, which has stacked a deck of 100 people from organizations that are sympathetic to the goals of the transportation commission.
Yes.
And they come out with their little consensus reports and then give it to the Board of Supervisors as though this is some kind of a reading of
on the pulse
of the whole community. Now there's 250,000 people who live here, and you get an average of attendance of about 60 to 100 people at these meetings, usually the same people, usually people involved in the Transportation Commission, and usually members of this 100-person task force that was, you know, it was prearranged and preordained to come to the conclusions that satisfy the sustainable objectives.
You could come to any conclusion if you got that small a group of people together. They're just the inside folks who have a certain agenda and they're going a certain way. I mean, you could probably put a group like that together for, you know, dumping nuclear waste in Santa Cruz County. That many people would probably agree to it. So, yeah, it was definitely a stacked deal.
But I wouldn't want the listeners out there to think that they should just forget about these consensus meetings, because it is consensus meetings that are running the entire country right now at the local level. And, of course, the New World Order is a global-to-local dynamic that skips the national government, and the national government is feeding the trough for this transition, this globalist movement, whether it's Bill Clinton or George Bush 1 or George Bush 2. So we've had, nearly 20 years now of this process coming from the federal government. Here in Santa Cruz, you know, we got into it early, even before the UN announced the program. And there are other communities around the country that have been in it as long as we have. But every community in the country is doing it now. And you say, well, I don't hear about it. I say, well, that's simply because you're not paying enough attention to know where these small little consensus meetings are occurring in your community. Now, if you do investigate, you will find out where they're happening. And there are ways of dealing with these meetings. You don't just blow them off, because these are the suggestions that then go to your elected officials, who are then either, as in this county, members of this new globalist dynamic, or are just gullible enough. I was in San Jose, and I met some sweet young city councilwoman, and she'd just been elected and had been toted off to these programs paid for by the city to indoctrinate her with the ideas of sustainable development, and she was just reading them back to me like you couldn't believe. She just got an A on her test, I guess, because she was so proud of being in on this inner core. And that's happening in city after city, and people don't have enough of an understanding of the basics of government and how it is that these predetermined consensus meetings are really an anathema to a free society. So you got to go, you know, you got to find out how they're being operated. We have some good materials that'll show you how to break up the consensus process. And, you know, here in Santa Cruz, they've had enough experience with Santa Cruzans doing that they've had to kind of go into a shutdown mode where they don't let you talk much. But even then, there are ways of getting the word out so that other people understand, and that they cannot then proclaim consensus reached and go to the Board of Supervisors and get ordinances drafted, passed, and sustainability placed upon the heads of everybody in your community.
Yeah, I saw that in my own community a few years ago. There was a group who were trying to create all kinds of types of new rules and regulations, and myself, along with a few other people, we spoke up, and we were able to hold it at bay, at least for now. So I agree with you, it can be stopped.
It can be stopped.
Don't quit.
Don't quit. And check in with Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. We've got materials to help you, whether you're here in Santa Cruz or anywhere in the country, because what we're experiencing is, we're a tiny little county, 250,000 people. This is happening everywhere. This is a globalist movement that has overwhelmed every county in the United States. You may not be as far along as we are. All we do is try to put out the sounding alarm and gather the materials from here and from elsewhere to help every American take part in the recapture of the American ideal and conform your local and state government to those very ideals.
Yeah, we have no other choice, so we have to.
Thanks a lot, Daniel.
Thank you.
We have another caller on the line, Rick. Rick, you have a question or a comment?
Yes, I do. Excuse me, I'm going to turn my radio off here.
Okay, thanks.
I'm from Santa Cruz, and I've noticed that, I guess it's what you were talking about, where you said they got the money. They have gotten a lot of money from the state, and they're using some local money. I don't know where all they got it, and I'm wondering.
There's a lot of grant money in there too.
Yeah, they're going to change an intersection at Capitola Road and Soquel there by the medical center for the benefit of a few dozen bicycles that use it a day. They're going to spend, I don't remember how much it is, $250,000 or something. It's a huge amount of money. And pull out a whole bunch of redwood trees that are in there and inconvenience thousands and thousands of motorists, because they're going to make the corner. It's a sweeping curve that allows people to go from one road onto another one, from Soquel onto Capitola Road, without stopping. They just turn there, but the bicyclists don't like to cross there. Instead of crossing the street and going down the other side, they want a bike lane there, and they want a square corner instead of a sweeping corner, and they want to stop the traffic and make them make a right turn there. It's really an absurd thing. The concept of the greatest good for the greatest number just is absolutely out the window, because it is it's the bicycle program, which Santa Cruz is so worships. And I wondered what can be done about it. What can be done to stop it at this point?
Well, I'm not sure what can be done to stop it at this point, other than having a broad, broadening, greater numbers of people who understand that particular dynamic and who say no. You know, the reality is the city leaders here are trying to turn Santa Cruz into Peking West. That means they're
right.
Trying to turn us all into bicycle riders, and only those official officials granted permission to use a car would use our thoroughfares as
they drive their big cars and park them in the basement of the county building. And
right. But you're to be on your bike, and if you're not on it yet, Rick, I mean, you're just slow to react.
Well, what can be done to stop this? I mean, where did this grant money come from? Is there some way to complain to whatever state agency issued it about how absurd this is and how wrong it is?
Well, I think the better route would be to have somebody on the Santa Cruz City Council who stood for the right principles.
But you can't do that because the university's here, and they don't have district voting. So the university elects all the council members. So you have everybody goes along with the party line. I mean, until you get district voting in Santa Cruz, we're not ever going to have anything different as long as there's a university here.
I've been hearing that from people, and I don't live in the city of Santa Cruz.
I don't either, but my address is Santa Cruz. I'm nearby. I'm in the county area.
Well, I think the people in Santa Cruz are voting themselves into a deep hole.
But the problem is, it's the university that has provided this carte blanche for the so-called progressives. And they vote like sheep. They will always vote for the leftmost candidate. And there's nothing that regular people that live here and have to live with the results long term can do about it. I mean, you would think that there would be some way to get district voting, because if there were a underrepresented Latino element or something like that, you could do that. But if it's just an underrepresented point of view, you can't do that. So you can't even get one member of the city council, or the only decent supervisors we have are generally the ones from South County.
Well, I live in the South County, and I would disagree with you on that point. I look at the Board of Supervisors, and it's the same as the Santa Cruz City Council.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
And we don't have the university to blame.
Yeah.
Okay. It is the voters are in some sense of oblivion when it comes to facing the reality of what it means. You know, people in Santa Cruz need to come to understand that the goal is single-family homes. Now, they're not tearing down too many single-family homes yet. But as the process proceeds, it will be just as in England. We've had a guest from England talking about the 3.5 million single-family homes that Tony Blair is turning down, relocating these people in urban high-rise government housing units.
No kidding.
Yeah. And that process isn't going to stop in England. Okay. Sustainable development is about eliminating single-family homes. Now, people in Santa Cruz are largely in single-family homes. They better get used to the reality that the people they are electing are creating the infrastructure necessary to bring the votes on board to cause that exactly to happen.
So in terms of what I was talking about, the intersection problem, you're saying there's just essentially nothing that can be done about it.
No, I'm not. I'm saying that the people of Santa Cruz have got to come to the reality of the program that they have hitched themselves to. It is all about eliminating single-family homes. When they went and did this Creekside ordinance and took people's backyards, and I watched the city council meeting, and people were just fine with that. I mean, you know, the people being adversely affected were singing the praises of this crazy ordinance. I say, well, that isn't the University of Santa Cruz doing that to you. That's doing it to yourself. So if you want to hit yourself in the face and at the same time destroy a healthy and productive life for your children, then continue with these processes, City of Santa Cruz and County of Santa Cruz. But what needs to happen is the process of awakening the people to the reality of what sustainable development is all about.
Rick, thank you for your call. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Thank you very much.
We're back in the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. I love these kinds of shows. 1-888-245-4237. And we're talking about, you know, going down a road that's not going to be paved, full of potholes, because if you vote for fixing it, it's not going to happen.
Well, you know, we do have the potholes, and people are beginning to complain about that. And I just look and say, well, the potholes are going to get worse until sustainable development and its policies are eradicated from this county, and better yet, eradicated from the state, and finally, from our nation. Because these are the policies that will take us all down. They're intended to do that.
And you were, I think, getting to a point with that last caller, which struck me after listening to you talk for a while. You really can't have it both ways. You know, you're either against it or you're with it, really. I mean,
That's right. And if you're with it, you better understand what you're talking about, because, you know, if you're with it, you're going to get it, okay? There's nothing that, of all the people I know in this community or anywhere, the people who support sustainable development without understanding it are the people who are going to suffer. Well, they're going to suffer more than those of us who get it, because we're going to prepare in some way for it. Those who think this is a panacea are the people who are going to really be crying in their beers.
It struck me when you talked about the Creekside ordinance, I think it was, you know, where they say, oh, well, that's good. You know, that's good on the one.
It's taking my backyard, but it's good.
Yeah, or it's not taking my. It's taking my neighbor's backyard.
Well, you have that
because
problem.
It didn't really affect me.
Sure.
And it was a good thing for whatever the fish or whatever. But that's what I'm talking about. You can't have it both ways.
Can't have it both ways. You know, there's a great quote out of Germany following Hitler. You know, well, first they came for the Catholics. I wasn't one. I didn't do anything. Then it came for the Jews. I wasn't one, and it didn't do anything. Then they came for me, and there was nobody left to do anything for me. Well, America's heading down that same course. It's time we stand up, defend our neighbor's private property, our neighbor's private expression, our neighbor's private lives, because the three wrapped together as one.
And that's how it has to be. It's about, you know, backing your neighbor, because the next one might be you.
Exactly. And sustainable development, if you haven't figured out that it has its sights on you, it's only because you haven't figured it out yet, because it does have its sights on everybody.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. 888-245-4237 if you want to participate. We're back with the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program, and we're nearing the end of our second hour, and I have thoroughly enjoyed myself having this conversation with Michael Shaw, because, as we say, we're talking about Santa Cruz County, but wherever you are, make no mistake, it's in your neighborhood. You may not know, you may not have looked, but these consensus meetings, these sustainable development policies are being implemented
in your neighborhood. So you have to pay attention. Again, we go, do you really care? That's what it's about.
Well, that's a great question and a great posing of the question, Roy, because, I do believe that people, if they can pause, we're all busy, but if you pause and consider what's happening in America, where we're being taken, how it is that this is happening without any real support, you conclude that, gee whiz, I got to dedicate some portion of my daily energy to at least informing my children about perhaps maybe how they're being misdirected in school, or what America really is from the perspective of an evaluation of all human history, and what's at risk as America is being taken down through a process called sustainable development. Sure, you got these other factors, terrorism, etc., which all feed from sustainable development, and feed from the globalist nature that our national government has had for some decades, as we rule and dominate here, there, and everywhere, creating enemies that now we have to be wary of. And of course, it's the existence of those enemies, as our last guest talked about, that creates the conditions that allows for this rising police state in America. When you hear the term sustainable development, it sounds sweet and warm and fuzzy with its ecological component and its economic component and its fairness or equity component, but what it is about the rise of the worldwide police state, centered first in what was the freest country in the world, centered here in the United States.
And I want to get this too, and it's feeding the globalist corporate interests.
Well, that's, you know, that's where the leftists in Santa Cruz have been so befuddled and confused. They think this is about saving the marbled murrelet up in the mountains. It's about creating a global corporate state. And we're getting close enough. They ought to be able to figure that out. Watch the BP Petroleum ads on TV, or watch the GE ads on TV. Two multinational corporations fully dedicated to the concept of sustainable development. Prince Charles, for 35 years, has run councils with major corporations on that side of the Atlantic, on this side of the Atlantic, if there's any difference anymore, about how it is you create the sustainable dynamic. You know, the global corporations know that the funny money that has been provided by every central bank around the world is about to implode. They want to keep their control despite that implosion, and the way they're doing that is through the process of sustainable development by eliminating individual liberty. That's what it's about. Remember next time you go to the polls, but first you got to do the work to find out who are the sustainable developers, and if somebody's running for government, you can almost expect for sure they are, because they have dominated the political scene in this state for a good while.
And we'll give you a lot of information, f21sc.net. There's a lot of information, all the things we're talking about. And as I say, follow the money.
Well, follow the money and listen to the real meaning of the words that you hear from, whether it's George Bush or Hillary Clinton, whether it's Arnold Schwarzenegger or his predecessor, I've even forgotten his name, and here on the local scene, well, you cannot avoid sustainable development when you look at politicians in Santa Cruz. They're all wrapped with it.
Yeah, and I remember last time I went to the website, we had a good thing on how to interpret all those nice fuzzy words for you. Well, Michael, it's been great. I always love these kinds of shows, so thank you for your passion.
Well, thank you, Roy.